I have many questions to follow up on here, different pieces. From the perspective of prosecuting for genocide, mm-hmm. which is, as we've talked about, really quite different than if there's a single murder, mm-hmm. or even if multiple people are murdered by a small group of people. Mm-hmm. And if you think about how those prosecutions unfold over time, mm-hmm. and you're thinking and thinking about tribunals in the future, how should I phrase this? One thing you could conclude is the kind of strategy that you've articulated is really the strategy that ought to have been applied from the beginning. Or another thing you could conclude is that in the beginning, when one is first starting to understand the territory of the genocide, there's something about needing a different kind of prosecution in the beginning that evolves. Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering, from your perspective and your experience, if you were to be mentoring another prosecutor of a tribunal somewhere else at some other time, and taking the longer term perspective of how prosecutions would unfold, what recommendations about strategy would you give based on your experience?
Well, we thought actually one of the lessons which we need to learn from our own experiences is that when you do set up a tribunal, and you right from the beginning, you need to develop your completion strategy at that point. In other words, you need to decide right from the beginning, what are you trying to do? How many people do you want to prosecute? How long do you want to go on? Who do you want to prosecute? And when do you want to close down? The ad hoc tribunals did not do that. Even though they had been set up as ad hoc with a definite lifespan, mm-hmm. you know, sort of at least a lifespan, not much thought had gone into these questions, and so the work was just going on. But I think one of the lessons, the first lesson is to that we need to learn right from the beginning that we need to establish a completion strategy. And I think even for the ICC, which is a permanent court, you need to establish a completion strategy in respect of a particular situation. Mm-hmm. If it is Congo or DRC or Sudan, mm-hmm. if you are going in, you need to determine, what do I want to do here? Mm-hmm. Who is my target? When do I want to finish the job? And at the end of the day, what do I want to have accomplished? The other lessons relate to strategy, and we've discussed some of these issues. I think you need to be concerned about ensuring that the trials move on speedily and mm-hmm. conclude speedily. Mm-hmm. And that can be affected by the size and the nature of your indictment. Mm-hmm. You need to have smaller, focused indictments. Mm-hmm. You need to probably move away from multiple accused to single accused cases. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's an advantage to have multiple accused. Mm-hmm. If the witnesses are common, mm-hmm. the evidence is the same, and the incidents are the same, it doesn't make sense to separate the accused. Mm-hmm. You put them together, you'll save time. But there are dangers also in putting accused mm-hmm. together. I mean, if anything happens to any of them, the whole case gets mm-hmm. held back. I mean, I mentioned, I think, yesterday mm-hmm. the Karamera mm-hmm. trial. Mm-hmm. We are now faced with the issue before the trial chamber mm-hmm. as to whether one of the accused mm-hmm. should be severed mm-hmm. from the case, because he won't be able to appear in court for the next 6 months. Mm-hmm. Should we sever him from the case and continue with the other two, or should the whole case be adjourned? That's one of the difficulties with multiple accused mm-hmm. trials. Anything that happens to one accused or defense counsel or a judge, mm-hmm. you know, it impacts on the whole case itself. And another lesson I believe is, which we have also recognized, is particularly in relation to sexual violence offenses. We have not been as successful as we would have wished. We have not had a very good record of convictions for sexual violence, even though right from the beginning this tribunal broke fresh ground in the Akayuksu case by holding that sexual violence can't constitute genocide. But we haven't gone much beyond that. And the lesson we've learned in respect of sexual violence is that it is important and necessary to prosecute it, but you have to fast track it. You have to give it priority in terms of prosecution. If the cases don't get to court within a number of years, you'll find that by the time you are ready to go to court, your victim is not interested in justice. It's usually not interested in justice. You want to pursue the justice line. the victim has resettled, is remarried, has family. They don't want to reopen those issues anymore. And that's one of the problems we've had. They don't want to reopen. You want to push the justice angle, but they say, no, look, I don't want to reopen that chapter again. And you end up therefore not being able to prosecute. So you need to, I think, to deal with sexual violence very early, at a very early stage, when people still, when victims still want justice, and they can still, you know, pursue the justice line. I think these are some of the lessons. Organizationally, I think even within the OTP, there are a number of issues also, or lessons. How do you organize your trial teams? I found here, for instance, a distinction drawn between trial attorneys and appeals attorneys. Whereas at the national system, there is no such distinction. All attorneys are supposed to be capable trial lawyers and capable appeals lawyers. It's been very difficult, if not impossible, to change that separation here. But I think when for the future, when one is setting up an OTP, you need to just have trial attorneys who can do both aspects of the work. Sometimes I think the trial teams themselves could be, you know, reduced to more manageable sizes, more manageable sizes. And these are some of the lessons I think we've learned and which can be taken into account by for the future.